This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
On reopening day for the Cubs, how ready were they for the challenge posed by Arizona? In retrospect, was it a good idea to start Justin Steele? What did you think of the reconfigured batting order with Matt Shaw batting eighth?
Yeah, I thought everything kind of worked. I felt like they had a really good performance. You know, we talked about how we... I love, first of all, the word reopening, because it is reopening day. And I'm amused by that. We thought, let's be honest about it, I mean, all of us collectively as a show, were fearful that Arizona was the bad team to come back to. After losing two to the Dodgers in Japan, you're messing around for a week, and now you got Arizona, and you see their pitcher, and you're just kind of like, yeah, this is not going to be good. Well, it was great. It was really good. And, the one thing you don't complain about is the batting order when you win and you score 10 runs. So I thought the batting order worked out great. I thought Justin Steele wasn't as sharp as he usually is, but he was sharper than Gallen was. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah.
He was good enough to get a victory in that game. I mean, I know he didn't go long enough to do it, but... that was good. It was a good, really, really strong performance from the Cubs up and down the order, too. They got a lot of contribution.
Seemed like the Cubs were definitely ready. I love the batting order. Craig Counsell, I know we give him a lot of grief sometimes, but kudos to him on the batting order. I mean, everybody on the Cubs got a hit, I think, except for Swanson. I mean, 10 runs. I mean, you can't argue with that. And going against Arizona, I was worried because, to me, the Dodgers are the Dodgers. They're on an island on its own. And then I felt like the biggest threat to me to the Dodgers were Arizona. So I was really worried about this one, especially going into the weekend. I'm like, man, if they just lose this series right now, it's not going to look good. But you're off to a good start right now. Steele was okay. You know, I'm giving it some time with that. I'm not going to worry. It's the first, couple of starts for him. But overall, great lineup. I love it. Great win by the Cubs.
So much fun when they score 10 runs and we can delay for a day parsing everything Jed Hoyer says and trying to look for meaning in the words and the urgency that exists, because when you score 10 runs and you show how much length can be in your lineup, that's fun to consider, the possibility. Miguel Amaya with the big hit. PCA making things happen with his speed as planned and by design. Matt Shaw scores 3 runs, gets on base, and has a hit as well. So there was a lot to like. How about Nico Hoerner? That was refreshing to see 2 hits from him, because he wasn't part of things in Japan.
Right.
You understand what he means to this lineup. And then Ian Happ setting the tone at the top of the order, where I guess he belongs for now. For now. Because I think eventually when you see what PCA is capable of doing on the base paths, you envision that being part of the Cubs' offensive identity. Kyle Tucker got in the mix. You liked everything that you saw from the Cubs last night. Justin Steele, he gutted his way through it. That was a workmanlike effort, not Gage, but workmanlike from your ace. And the Cubs did everything they needed to do. And when you score 10 runs, it makes everything else that happened a lot easier to say, well, you know, we'll work on it. We'll get sharper, because now finally they have a victory and against a pitcher that's very good. So tough series in Arizona, but it's nice to get the first one.
Completely understand the question, and I know you've got to ask, part of your job.
That's the voice of Josh Giddey. What do you make of his half-court buzzer beater to beat the Lakers? Was that the wildest win of the season? How do the Bulls keep winning?
Well, Josh Giddey is really becoming one of these guys that's easy to pull for because of what he does on the court, how he expresses his way in the expresses himself in the locker room, and that trade is becoming one of the things that you look at as, wow, I did not see this coming. Alex Caruso, with due respect, he's going to be on a team that might win the NBA championship. They're not going to complain about that deal in Oklahoma City. But it is benefiting both teams. Josh Giddey is emerging as a foundational piece in Chicago. And then you add to the fact that he hit the longest buzzer beater in team history. Oh, my Giddey aunt! So much fun. The Bulls are winning, and they keep winning. And it's 9 out of 11 because of the way they share the basketball, because of the way they hit clutch shots, and because of the way they use their depth by design. This is what Arturis Karnišovas envisioned when he gave that really awkward press conference at the trade deadline and talked about wanting to go 8 to 10 players deep. This is the ideal situation in terms of using your roster and then getting clutch performances from the guys at the top of it. Long may it last. They got the Mavs tomorrow night. We'll see how that goes.
Elizabeth, I'm coming, baby.
That's exactly how I felt watching that game. So when I was watching the tournament and I was going back and forth, and then my friend called me and he was like, hey, you need to turn back on that Bulls game. It's getting really good right now. So, I mean, that shot kind of reminded, it felt like a playoff atmosphere type of game.
Yeah.
It reminded me somewhat similar to the Derrick Rose shot over LeBron James Cleveland Cavaliers during that time in the semifinals. I remember that. I mean, this team is playing phenomenal right now, and you got to love it. And the confidence is at an all-time high. I think I'm about to just stamp and approve it. Like, I don't care no more how Josh Giddey plays. Pay him. Pay him right away. Build around the core. Giddey, Bouzelis, Kobe White, I love it. LeBron James was just straight horrible at the end of that one. I mean, man, you know who's going to have a field day is Stephen A. probably going to have a field day on him. Like, how could you not defend Josh Giddey, but you got the nerves to talk about me? But overall, love the performance.
Okay, just for the record, just so we got it straight, LeBron James was, wait for it, 0-for-5 from three-pointers. Man. LeBron James, in the 4 games since he returned, 1-of-12 from three-point land. Yesterday, Patrick Williams, 2-of-4 three-pointers, and they were big three-pointers. The one shot was unbelievable. He hit a really clutch three-pointer. Patrick Williams, greater than sign, LeBron James.
Yes.
Question mark.
That's how much fun yesterday
That's
was.
That's how much fun it was. It was, everybody was in on it. There were some great moments, some great shooting, the comeback. Yeah, I tell you what, even when it gets to Giddey hitting that shot, the confidence that the Bulls, the self-belief that they are playing with, allowed them to come back from what was their biggest deficit in the fourth quarter? It was over
18.
16. It was 18, right? And then you look at how they trailed late in that fourth quarter. They were down 13 with 5:30 left, and they took the lead before they eventually gave it back up and then won it with the late buzzer beater. They're playing with extreme confidence. They are playing with I don't know what resilience means. Oh, we come back all the time. No, that's not it. It's self-belief. It's that you don't feel you are on a roll. They've won four in a row now and 9 of 11. And they just are one of these teams that they've uncovered how to win. And it's like they're, you know, I thought Kendall Gill was great yesterday. First of all, he and Jason were jumping up and down.
That was hilarious.
That was hilarious. Yeah. But then Kendall at one point said, you could tell watching Kobe that he didn't have it. Whether he was physically tired or mentally drained, he just didn't have
it. 9 of 20.
And then
he
got it together in time to make big plays and hit big shots down the stretch. It was fantastic. Great win for the Bulls.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's another really good question.
What was the biggest story for the White Sox in their glorious 8-1 opening day victory over Mike Trout and the Angels? Was it Sean Burke with a 3-hit, 6-inning shutout, or a whopping 3 home runs from a power challenge team, including a solo shot from Austin Slater in the second, an 8th-inning bomb, and 8th-inning bombs from Andrew Benintendi, and a 3-run shot from Andrew Benintendi and a 2-run shot from Lenin Sosa?
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, I think my biggest takeaway, and I don't know how many games they got in them this year. I'm going to have to raise my total. But I feel like the biggest thing is that they played fundamental baseball. They hit when they had to. The big shots, they added to a lead in the 8th inning after preventing a team from catching them, last year they'd have given up a grand slam in that situation to Soler, and instead he was struck out, and that was the end of the inning in the 8th inning. But you just felt like they added on runs. They played with confidence. I'm going to say my biggest takeaway was the manager, was his first victory as the manager of the White Sox. It's on opening day, and they do everything right. They didn't kick the ball around. They got a great pitching performance, and they got pitching all the way through. They allowed one solo shot in the 9th inning, and that was it. You're going to win a lot of games if you can do that sort of thing. So I just think it represented a new era. I'm going with the new era, the new Will Venable era.
I'm with you, Mully. I think Will Venable makes a huge impact on this team. I think with baseball, too, I think managers really create a huge difference overall. So that's why I think I had him around like 57 wins. I kind of went on high, not as high as Dustin, who had him at like 60. But I think with this team overall, I think they're really going to get down to the fundamentals. And I think a lot of these players on this team, even though like we don't know like probably half of them, the fact is that they're all fighting for their MLB career. So I think you're always going to get that hard work effort, and I think they're going to win some games that we probably don't expect them to win, so they might sneak and win a few, and that's why I got in there. But this is all about the manager to me overall in this game. And also, I just want to add this in there, I love the fans, how they were reacting towards TA. I love that you had Derrick Rose throwing out the first pitch. I mean, overall, it was a beautiful opening day for the Sox. Maybe you have Derrick Rose, it was right down the middle. Make him the closer.
Good call. Yeah, I think the manager, that's very consistent with what came across yesterday as one of the biggest changes. Will Venable? Yes, he will. He will make a difference. And I think that he's a kind of guy that you trust to make the right decisions. It's a small sample size. It's spring training and plus one yesterday. But what I feel like from a team standpoint, you got a good sense of was what he thinks about his bullpen and who he does identify as the high leverage guys. You look at Jordan Leisure fitting into that maybe setup guy. The second most valuable or most trusted relief pitcher in the bullpen. Mike Clevinger is a guy that when they needed to get a big out, he went to Mike Clevinger and wasn't afraid to do that. Leisure, Clevinger, they used Murphy to come in after Sean Burke was great. But I think you start to see the roles being defined over time. Hopefully they'll be in high leverage games and situations where it will matter what decisions he makes with that bullpen. Sean Burke, the possibility of Sean Burke being a serviceable, above average, major league starting pitcher. This was only his fourth start, right? So you don't really know what you have, but what you saw, you like. And just the overall approach to the bullpen and then the success of the pitching staff gives you a little bit of hope for a team that didn't have a lot leaving Arizona. So now, great way to reward the fans who were there for TA. They saw Derrick Rose. It was a great day at 35th and Shields, and they have the day off today to recover and hopefully have another good weekend with the Angels still in town.
I now have to be a question I'm going to have to ask my mom.
How did you take Jaquan Brisker's post on Instagram yesterday? He wrote, "I promise to come back better than ever. Your unwavering support means everything to me in these challenging times. From the heart, I appreciate each and every one of my fans, your prayers and messages. We didn't finish strong, and I say it's all my fault. I wish I could have fought alongside my team and win. That's my true passion and purpose. I will rise from this and come back and take what's mine. Year four will be special. It will be a testament to our will and resilience. Until I return, remember there are no comparisons." What is your read on that?
Well, I think he's a really introspective young man who feels the weight of not living up to expectations in Chicago, where his career started very strong, and then because of injuries and concussions, it's really stalled. So I want to nod your head and say great attitude, tremendous positivity. You are an example of perseverance. But I don't know what his situation is. I still don't know if he's any closer to returning to the field or not. You can want things to happen, and you can be committed passionately to making them happen. But until in this situation you get a clearance from the doctors and the people that are evaluating your concussion and how bad it is and what your brain injury looks like, I don't know what to make of Jaquan Brisker's commitment, because as passionate as he sounded, I don't know if I'm any closer to counting on him coming through. They still need a safety, and I still would draft a safety. And that doesn't mean if Jaquan Brisker is there that he's not going to play, but you have to be sure that he's able to stay on the field. Availability is still the best ability, and I don't think Jaquan Brisker is available yet. If he is, great. If not, then I feel very bad and even worse now, because that was pretty eloquent what he expressed. He wants to be back. He just needs to be healthy enough to do it.
That's one of the things I remember. I think we had Grody one time fill in here, and I think me and Dustin wanted to ask him, like, hey, when you talk to Ryan Poles, like, can we find a status about Brisker? Because, you know, I'm worried about him. And this tweet, I didn't know how to feel about it, just because of the fact that, yeah, okay, you want to come back better than ever, but are you? Like, that's the thing. He plays hard when he's on the field and he's healthy. I love him as a player. I mean, his comp, I think, coming in was, I heard a lot of, like, Bob Sanders or something like that, and we saw what happened with his career. And that's one of the things. He plays with so much intensity. I'm just worried, and that's why I'm with you, David. I would draft a safety. I wouldn't be mad if they even traded back in that first round, got a safety. I wouldn't care if they went into the second round and maybe get a safety with one of those picks. I would, just in case, because you don't know with Brisker's health. And then you got Byard right now, who's like, I think he's on his last year of his deal. So, yeah, I just hope he gets healthy. I want him to get better, and hopefully, you know, soon.
Yeah, did he have a setback or something? Did something happen to trigger him to write this, that I will be back and all that? I'm not trying to read too much into
it. Good question.
But it kind of came out of nowhere.
Well,
right?
So did last year. He was expected to come back, remember, on that Friday. Then all of a sudden he wasn't.
Right.
So it seems like he gets close and then something happens and you got to read between the lines with this.
But I thought there were a couple of things in here that really made me wonder. I'm not sure I knew what he meant in the last sentence where he says, until I return, remember, there are capital N, no, capital C comparisons. I didn't know how to take that. Is he saying, like, I'm not one of these guys that has had a concussion. Don't compare me to other players that couldn't continue their careers. Or is he saying, don't be going out trying to replace me because I'm better than anybody?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like, I didn't quite understand what he meant. And I don't mean that negatively. I think he had a message that he wanted to deliver, but I wasn't sure how to take that last sentence. And I feel like I don't want him to trade back. I want him to get the best player they can get at 10. And I want him to still load up on the line of scrimmage. But I kind of want him to try to replace him. And I kind of want him to get another cornerback, even though they signed a guy. I feel like they might need to replace Tariq Stevenson. And I don't know that they've made any moves to do that. But I just, with a new group coming in, you just kind of got to make sure that you're as good as you can be at positions that you may have thought you had, but it didn't quite work out. And I got nothing but respect for Jaquan Brisker. I think he plays great, but you said it, you know, the availability thing. Number one, you got to have guys that are out there. And this is, sadly, the dilemma you ran into with Tevin Jenkins, where you know, the guy, okay, so we can start a game, but nine times he can't finish one. You can't go into a football game like that. You got to make sure you got people that are going to be there and be there for the season.
And I remember the question was...
All right, let's get to the NCAA tournament. First, I want to remind you, College Hoops coverage on the Score is brought to you by Bet365. What March Madness game was your favorite last night? Would you like to make a prediction on tonight's games? Biggest upset? What do you got?
Well, I didn't think there were any upsets. Did you feel like there were any big upsets? I mean, I felt like Alabama scored a lot of points, man. Oh, my goodness gracious. Would they have 113 points in a college game?
Like an NBA game.
When do you see that? And they have made 25 threes in this tournament so far. Holy guacamole. That was really, it was like an NBA game. Duke, you felt they were going to win that game, and they scored a ton of points. It might have been a little closer than I imagined. It's the first time they haven't won by 20. My favorite game was Florida because I was, you know, I had boiled water and rolled up sheets, and I was trying to bring that one home. And I'm like living and dying on every possession because I picked them to be my national champion, and the last thing I needed was Maryland to knock them out. And my wife was there, and she kept saying to me, this game isn't close, why are you getting so upset? And I'm like, because they're turning over the ball. Like, I just had a very hard time watching that game. I watched every play of it, and I was living and dying.
Did you say it just like that?
And they won I may have been less anxious. But the best game, obviously, was Texas Tech coming back and winning in overtime. That was the closest game and probably the best game. And, you know, I kind of like seeing Cal go out. Enough of that. No more. I don't want to see any more. I don't want anyone else coming on yelling at me about Cinderellas.
So, I agree with you, Miles. There was no upsets. Like, Arkansas kind of blew that. They had that game. locked. I was like, okay, Arkansas won this game. I can lay down and call it. And I woke up, Texas Tech came back and won it. But besides that, there was really no upsets. I was kind of rooting for Maryland a little bit. Somewhat, I do like Maryland. I was growing to like them because of Angel Reese Brothers on that team, Julian Reese. Yeah. I like Queen, of course. I want the Bulls
crab
to get him.
Five.
I was rooting for him, even though I know you guys love Florida. I was rooting for him. But then a part of me was a little happy because now I'm like, okay, good. They're out. The Bulls can sneak and get, you know, Queen. As far as the other games, I expect some more upsets probably this day than yesterday. I mean, I got Michigan, so I need them to win. So I'm going to go with Michigan, and I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Ole Miss beats Michigan State. I hate to say that for the Big Ten teams, but, I mean, those are the ones that I got.
Well, last night was a lot of fun to see how much offense there was in the BYU-Alabama game and Arizona-Duke. Yep. Both winners had at least 100 points. The Alabama outburst, 25 threes, is crazy. It was like watching an NBA game, and it was the second most three-point shots hit since Loyola Marymount. Remember that? 1990, 35 years ago. So that's a long time ago. And that kind of history you don't see very often. So that was fun. Not to compare everything to the NBA in this flyover state, but I do think that it did remind you of the three-point emphasis that the Bulls are, you know, experiencing now, too. The Cooper Flagg going for 30, that was fun because he was needed that kind of defining game in the tournament, and that was certainly great to see. But Arkansas-Texas Tech, Arkansas, the lowest-seeded team, the debate over whether or not they were really Cinderella or not. Now it's over. John Calipari bows out. He called it one of the more rewarding seasons in his career. That's saying something, given his career. Tonight, I think, Brandon, you're right. I think Michigan can beat Auburn. It could be a huge upset, but they're well-coached. Wouldn't be surprised if that happens. Michigan State's going to win. Sorry, guys. And Purdue is going to give Houston all it can handle. Provincially, yes, I would love to see Purdue upset Kelvin, don't call me Kevin Sampson, and then there would be three Big Ten teams left in the Elite Eight, and that would be fantastic.
How can they be the Crab Five and not have Tim Brando on the roster?
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Oh, guys. The Philadelphia Flyers fired coach John Tortorella, who has a reputation for being abrasive but getting the most out of his players. Is this the kind of coach that should interest the Blackhawks?
If he calls Dustin the Wonder Grump, what is he?
Oh, my God. Look in the mirror of reality, Don Quixote. Yeah.
Delayed reaction 24 hours later. Okay. I think that John Tortorella is not the answer in Chicago. I think it will be a question that is something you ask, because what do the Hawks need in their next coach? Due respect to his career, he's had a really good one. He's a fascinating guy. Fascinating guy. Controversial. He'll hold players accountable. He'll be, not to be ageist, but he's 66 years old in June. And I just feel like the Hawks, with this group, can probably get somebody else who is not on the sixth job. It would be a sixth stop. And I want the Hawks to get somebody who is maybe a little bit more invested in building and winning and growing with this core, and maybe a little bit less controversial. I'm not sure if John Tortorella is the answer. A lot of respect for what he's accomplished throughout his career. He's a cup-winning Stanley Cup-winning head coach, and he's great in the studio, too. Not sure what's next for him, but I don't really think Chicago makes sense.
I'm with you, David. I don't like this for this type of team. I feel like he too, is like the type of like coach that gets like let go every 2-3 years because he's so abrasive.
Yes.
So that's the thing, too. I think he rubs people the wrong way. That wouldn't be a good move overall. I would wait and see when the season's over and then go for them. But this person's not the answer, no.
I'm not against it, and I'm not an ageist like you guys, so I could see it happening. But I think they should hire John Cooper Or trade for him or whatever.
That would be great.
Would that be the best guy to have here?
And then get your guy, Marner. Then there you go.
Oh, my gosh.
There you go. Make it a
Hawks are back.
Here we go.
If they did those two things, the Hawks are back.
You do feel like they would be.
You know what? On this day, after yesterday?
Let's be a little bit ambitious.
Anything is possible.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible. Wow. That'd be something else.